From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Ellicott City's historic Main Street reopened yesterday. It's been closed since flooding devastated the area in July. One of the challenges property owners face is rebuilding in a way that meets the requirements of the historic district. We talked to a preservation advocate helping people navigate this issue and to the owner of two storefronts that were saved from demolition.
We're going to come back stronger and hopefully as historically perfect as we were before.
Then we'll hear a haunting true tale that takes place in a morgue. It's the first installment of a new weekly feature on our show, a story from the Stoop Storytelling Series, all on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Intense rainfall from a storm in late July drenched historic Ellicott City, propelling floodwaters through Main Street, washing away cars, and destroying storefronts. Two people died in the flood, and Governor Larry Hogan declared a state of emergency. As residents and property owners assessed the damage, one unique concern played a role. Ellicott City was founded in 1772. Its downtown was designated an historic district in 1976. Close to 200 buildings in the area are dated from before 1900. Ellicott City's Main Street reopened to pedestrian and vehicular traffic yesterday. This morning, we're talking about efforts to rebuild the downtown area while remaining true to its unique historical character. I'm joined by Nick Redding, Executive Director of Preservation Maryland, a nonprofit dedicated to preserving historic buildings, neighborhoods, and archaeological sites for future generations. Thanks so much for being here.
It's wonderful to be here with you this morning.
And joining us by phone is Jennifer Johnson, a Main Street property owner. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, Jen Johnson, tell us about the building that you own.
We have two buildings in the middle of town, and because of their location and their unique construction and their age, they're just exceptionally, they contribute exceptionally to the historic district itself.
When was your building built?
They're saying 1800.
Tell me what happened in the storm. Tell me what did you see?
We saw the buildings after the storm. We did have eyewitnesses who said that the water did not make the bend in the road. The buildings are right at the bend on Main Street, and the water went straight through the buildings from the front, also from the back, bringing all the walls down on the west side and partially down on the east side, the floor out in part of the building. A car went in the front. Tore out the party wall between the two stores and then came out dragging the wires with it.
Oh, my goodness. Nick Redding, what does Preservation Maryland do, and what is Preservation Maryland doing in Ellicott City?
We've been around for 85 years. We're the second oldest statewide historic preservation group in the nation. And principally, our focus is on advocacy, outreach. We do a lot of work in Annapolis on legislation and issues like that. But in moments like this, after disasters, we swing into action and play a more direct and on-the-ground role and really acted as sort of the preservation boots on the ground in the days following, and we continue to be there right now. So in the case of Jen's properties, we actually were able to step in and connect her with a preservation engineer, because the initial assessment, as Jen will probably tell you, was that those two historic buildings that she owns were going to be demolished because they consider them a public safety risk.
Jen, let me ask you, is that what you expected?
I knew nothing about the buildings until I saw on TV that the county had decided they were going to be destroyed. And I was trying to figure out what to do when I ran into Mary Catherine Cochran with the Patapsco Heritage Greenway, and she put us in touch with Nick Redding, and he put us in touch with Matt Dow from Keystone Hood in Washington, D.C., the structural engineer who came out, met with the county. They were very, very wonderful about allowing us this second chance to get this opinion. And Matt, with everyone there, he said, I've seen worse. They can be saved. And at that point, I was so excited. I was very, very, very grateful.
And this, Jen, this was about how long after the flood?
It was within the first week, I believe. Nick says his group swings into action. They flew into action in this case.
So you flew into action, Nick Redding, Preservation Maryland. Did you expect that quite a few of these historic buildings were not going to make it?
So we knew that there was going to be a problem as soon as the night of the 30th. My phone started going off. The night of the flood. And I started receiving calls from friends in Howard County saying, we've got a big problem on our hands. And so I was already talking to staff that evening. And we fully expected that there were going to be buildings that the county may feel that they had to demolish from a public safety standpoint. And we totally respect that. But we knew that we had resources and individuals like the folks at Keyston Hood, the engineering firm that we work with, who might be able to come up with strategies for saving some of these structures. And so we knew that in the short term, that was going to be the role that we would need to play, is getting engineers into the right places to sort of give, you know, in medical terms, almost a second opinion for the building.
It's On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Nick Redding of Preservation Maryland and Jen Johnson, a Main Street property owner, about rebuilding after the devastating flood in historic Ellicott City. Right after the flood last summer, several structures were deemed at risk, but ultimately no building had to be demolished. How much art and how much science is involved in deciding we can save these buildings, Nick?
It's a whole lot more science than it is art, because really when it comes down to the engineering, it comes down to what kind of loads the buildings can take and if the supporting walls are there, and if they're not, coming up with a strategy for at least temporarily replacing them. So we were actually able to work with a firm that is sort of known worldwide. They're called the Structural Group. They're based out of Elkridge, and they were able to come in and put in some temporary supports in the case of Jen's property and some other properties throughout town.
Describe to us, Nick Redding, some of the technology that Preservation Maryland is using in this process.
So in addition to the engineering side, we've also done some really interesting things with drones and lasers. So there's a firm in Owings Mills named Direct Dimensions, and they do laser scanning all across the globe. And we reached out to them, and they were willing and actually donated their services. We've scanned the entire district with lasers.
The
entire historic district, and it's accurate to 2 millimeters. So it is exceptionally accurate data, which is we have shared with the county for free, which is helping them with repair of infrastructure. And we're also providing that data for free to any property owners that could use it. It actually is helpful when you're having to draw up schematics for rebuilding. A lot of the storefronts and things like that have been washed out. So you actually have a really good sense for what has taken place there. And we actually then married that data with really high-res drone photography as well.
High-resolution drone photography.
Right. So actually, it's called photogrammetry, where a drone flies and takes thousands of images per second. And then those images are all compiled together, and you actually create a 3D model out of those. So this is one of the first times, actually, the firm that we did that with is called Elevated Element, and they were able to marry the data sets together. We also think, from their perspective, they told us this is probably the first time that this kind of technology has been deployed after a disaster.
So, Jen Johnson, tell me what's going on with your property then. Where are you in the process of stabilization and reconstruction?
Well, the property's been stabilized. The structural team also helped with cleaning the debris out. And while we were cleaning the debris out, we found some of our tenants' treasures that the structural team was able to save.
Let me interrupt and clarify. I didn't ask you earlier, what was in your buildings before the flood?
Two fabulous stores. One was Joan Eve's, beautiful store. It twinkled, it glittered. It was just one of the most glamorous places in Ellicott City. And Joan is Ellicott City. We're rebuilding for her. And the Collinses are also wonderful people. They had an antique store and many items from the Civil War washed down the Tiber River. So everything in the store, the two stores, was gone, except these items we found wrapped up from the torrential circular motion of this water through the building. And we have beautiful china and crystal that was wrapped in the carpeting and totally unbroken. But, you know, we've cleaned the debris out, and thanks to the structural engineer, the two stores, they were chained to these beautiful hand-hewn beams that are part of the building that are still there. They were chained to these with harnesses on so that the lack of there being a floor and the weak spots in the floor didn't cause them to go into the Tiber River. And they cleared out all the debris in the building. It's going to take us a year, but we're going to come back stronger and hopefully as historically perfect as we were before.
Let me pick up on that idea of historical perfection, Nicholas Redding. In an historic district, people can't just rebuild any old way. What kind of restrictions are there?
Well, I think what you're hearing from Jen is that not only are there restrictions, but it's an extremely complex process. And it's made even more complex by the fact that a lot of these property owners and people living in the district not only have to rebuild, which just a regular homeowner knows can be a tough job to oversee a small home improvement project, but imagine rebuilding after you've lost almost everything. And so because of that, we have actually committed to keeping a temporary preservation resource center open in Ellicott City for at least the next 9 months. And so we have two staff that we hired specifically for this work that are on the ground working there day in and day out to try and help folks get through that process, because it is a complex process. There's historic district commission reviews, and there's also a lot of incentives that go along with that. So there's a state
financial incentives.
There's a local, a state, and a federal tax credit that all have the potential to be deployed, but they're somewhat complex to use. And so we actually hired a woman named Renee Novak. She's acting as our field director there, who is on the ground, and she's a tax credit specialist. And so she's helping people understand how you phase these in together, what can and can't be done with them. But it's significant money that's on the table, and we want to make sure people are able to take advantage of them.
And part of that significant money is to support things like, for example, the windows need to be replaced with historically accurate windows.
Right. So if the windows have been lost, the replacement windows would have to meet the guidelines of the historic district. So, you know, in layman's terms, that would mean you need to put in wood windows, not vinyl windows. I mean, that's at a very basic level, that's sort of what you're dealing with there.
Jen, are you finding that a challenge, finding the historically accurate materials?
Well, it's a challenge, but it's something that we want to do because we want to help to preserve the Ellicott City Historic District. This is what people will look at. This is what they learn from. And it's also just a joy to be down in such a unique area and walking the streets and seeing just the special little lights that are on the front of the building. Even the light bulbs themselves in the lights are specialty light bulbs, and it just makes it unique.
Nick Redding, Main Street has experienced a lot of floods. I mean, because of where Ellicott City is located with the river and the creeks. Are there some design changes that property owners can make to plan ahead for the next flood?
Well, absolutely. And it is worth noting, though, that this is a very different flood than what Main Street and Ellicott City have experienced before. Oftentimes, the floods that date back to the 18th century were inundation floods. They were coming up from the Patapsco. This was a flood that came down Main Street. So it's much more of a flash flood than sort of a riverine inundation flood. And so the impacts are going to be different. You know, an inundation flood, everything gets wet, it molds. There are a lot of challenges with that. But the granite stoop on the front of your building isn't blown away in an inundation flood. And that's the kind of the power of this flood. You know, tons of the stoops and steps, just to think about the weight of a granite step just being blown away, or the front of Jen's building for that matter. So yeah, there are things that can be done. It is challenging. I actually just came off of a conference called working with the county to try and host a couple workshops about ways in which historic buildings can become more resilient. And so there are lessons to be learned from places like Annapolis, from the Jones Falls here in Baltimore, where they have come to terms with this and come up with some ways to at least make the buildings a little bit more resilient.
Like what?
There's ways of trying to relieve the hydrostatic pressure. So when the water pressure on the outside of a building and the outside of a foundation to sometimes let water come through, which the general response is to try and keep all water out. But in some cases, that can be damaging. It depends on the building. There are also floodproofing, dry proofing. So taking off historic siding, putting in some type of flood barrier, and then putting the siding back on, which has been done to some effect in Annapolis. And then there's simple things that actually don't cost much more money, but can help in the long run. An example of that would be moving your electric up. So rather than having your electrical outlets at the base level, where most people are used to having them, maybe moving them up 6 or 7 feet, so that if you do have a flood that comes through, it is going to cause damage, but then you don't have to tear out all of your electric and redo all of that.
So you'd reach up to reach your outlet instead of reaching down.
So, for example, in down at City Dock in Annapolis, a lot of the historic structures there, and we have a lot of restaurants and things like that, they have begun to do some of that work and just their routine upgrades.
Jen, I gather you expect at least one of your tenants back after you've finished work on the building.
Yes, we do expect Joan Eve to come back. We're very much hoping for that. Also, we have 3 residential units above the street area that was wiped out. The 3 apartments above are just now being able to be accessed by temporary stairways that were put in. All 3 tenants have said that the apartments are like nothing happened at all. They're not allowed to live in there, but they're allowed to access and get their items out. And that was one of our goals when we were told the buildings had to be torn down. But the apartments are darling, and everybody seems to really enjoy being in Ellicott City for their home.
You sound firm in your forward-looking view of things. Was there any point where you had second thoughts about rebuilding?
I never had second thoughts about rebuilding. I went in thinking, we can do this after Matt Dow said, I've seen worse. We can save those buildings. And I never looked back. I really appreciate Alan Kittleman. And
County Executive Alan Kittleman.
And Bob Francis, Head of Inspections, for letting us go ahead and do this. It's not been easy for anyone because we've had to come in with teams. We haven't been able to use volunteers until recently because of safety issues. But we've had the most fabulous teams in there. And with their attitudes, it's all been positive.
Nicholas Redding, Jen Johnson is talking about a year's timeline for her building. What would you say is the timeline overall
for the entire district?
For Ellicott City to be back?
Yeah, I think we're talking about that. And I think we're talking in a measure of years, not months. I think for some buildings, they'll come back in a year. I think some will be longer. And I think then you also have the challenge of retail establishments, restaurants that may not come back. And so there's going to be a need to reimagine and re-envision the retail environment down there. We're working with the Howard County Economic Development Authority and Alan Kittleman, and I would echo what Jen has said, is that Alan has been a true friend not only of everyone in Ellicott City, but certainly the preservation community. We can think of a lot of examples around this country where when a disaster strikes, the elected leaders are not too concerned about the historic fabric and the historic environment. But Alan has been a bright spot in that. And so we've been very, very pleased to work with him on that. But it is going to be a long haul.
Jennifer Johnson owns a building with 2 storefronts on Main Street. It's being stabilized and rebuilt. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
And Nicholas Redding is Executive Director of Preservation Maryland. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have a link to Preservation Maryland's website. They have a blog with updates on the rebuilding process. I'm Sheila Cass. Quick break, and then we'll put a great story on the record. Stay with us. Thank you.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Kast. Now we're going to hear the first installment of a new weekly feature on our show, a true tale from Baltimore's Stoop Storytelling Series. Our first storyteller is Kate Pratt, a certified eye bank technician and transplant coordinator. Her job is to surgically remove eye tissue from donors who recently died for use in transplants and research. In this story, edited for brevity, Kate describes the case of a teenager who died in a skateboarding accident. Out of more than 1,000 procedures, this one stayed with her. We join the story just after Kate Pratt has been called to the hospital.
So I get to the hospital. I get security to take me to the morgue. The security guards come in. They unlock the door. They go and they unlock the cooler. They get the heck out of Dodge, and I'm there by myself. I have done this many, many times. I put on my protective gear. I go into the cooler, a big metal room, very cold, racks, steel trays, bodies in white shrouds, and they have shroud tags so that you can find the person you're looking for. I moved him out into the autopsy room. I opened the shroud. I have a little traveling surgical kit. I schlep it everywhere I go. And so I'm setting these up, opening up my kits, getting ready. You know when you walk in a room and even though you can't really see what's going on in there, you can tell if you're alone or you're not. Well, I realized I was not alone in that morgue. It was a very strong feeling, so I walked over to the doors thinking that maybe security had come in and left because they saw I had the shroud open. I looked out into the corridors, no one, either side, nobody down there, nobody waiting. I even opened up the cooler to see if there was somebody moving around in there. There was not. So I came back in and I stood and I thought, well, maybe I'm having a stroke. I don't know. And as Sherlock Holmes and many others have said, when you have eliminated all of the possible avenues to explore, then you have to look at the impossible. And so I looked over and I thought, well, I mean, what's the worst could happen? I make a fool of myself in front of myself, you know? Oh, well. So I walked over to my donor, and yes, they are all my donors when I'm there. And I looked down and I said, maybe nobody thought to tell you, but you remember you were skateboarding yesterday and you hit your head and you got up and kept on going and you went home, you had dinner, you were with your family, and then you went to sleep. Well, you had a vessel that had broken in your brain, and it was bleeding, and it was causing pressure. And you actually whacked your brain so hard that you bruised it, and it was expanding. And it eventually shut off your breathing, and it shut off your heart, and you died. And I'm from the transplant group. And when we got in touch with your family, they were devastated about their loss of you. But you know what? They told us that helping people was your thing and that they knew that this would be what you wanted for them to do. So they set aside their grief and they filled out the paperwork so that you could become a donor and you could help someone see again. What I wanted to tell you was that it's okay. You can go. You don't have to hang around here. And I ran out of things to say. So it was time for me to do my scrub, betadine scrub. I went over to the deep sink. I'm over there, and those of you who have ever had to scrub or watched the doctor shows, you actually start focusing on how many times you're scrubbing each of your digits, each side. And I did. I started to focus on that. And then suddenly, about 2 minutes into it, I was alone. So I finished the case and went on with my life. But I know that in my dotage, whether it's me sitting out on my deck, talking to friends and family, or if it's me in a nursing home, talking to my imaginary friends, I know in the core of my being that this is the story that I will be telling.
That was Stoop storyteller and transplant coordinator Kate Pratt. On Monday night, the Stoop will stage its first show of this season, Fight Club. It's at the Senator Theater. Visit stoopstorytelling.com for more information on that show and the series. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Have a great weekend. We're back with you Monday, Columbus Day.